last month's talk is January 19th on Car Electronics, and I'm trying to create a group, a user group, focused on car electronics and diagnostics, because then we can chip in and buy the latest, highest performing tools to be used in diagnostic cars. You need a special hardware adapter to get access to the complete protocol on cars, on the diagnostic connector. You can actually get the software cheap. Like, I paid $15 for the Torque. It's called Torque. It's an app download on my smartphone and tablet.
Really?
That allows me to diagnose my car with a little, I don't know, $15 hardware adapter.
It goes from USB to the
point. Actually, I used a blue Bluetooth interface. So it's a little box plugged in the diagnostic connector in my tablet sitting here.
Really?
From your, Bluetooth. So for people interested in car electronics, cars like the Chevy Volt have 100 processors in it. So
wow.
It's very complex.
Most
of them are embedded. You find embedded processors everywhere now. You know, embedded into your refrigerator and every
dishwasher
everywhere.
And dishwasher talks to our iPad.
Really?
It does now?
Wow.
Wow. Yes.
Let's hope they don't all get together.
So the talk itself from last time is this thing. When you click that, you have the whole talk. And I did the same thing this time for electric cars. The talk is right here. So the first half of this is going to be a talk to give background information, directions, and all that. Second is to look at the cars we have. So we'll end up having four cars here. And I made this big print so you can see it. But this is all online. So I'm going to talk about what is driving the world of auto manufacturers to meet the 56 miles per gallon mandate. That was August of last year. All the manufacturers agreed to the new standard to meet 56 miles per hour by 2025. What is that, 12 years from now. And so they're really aggressively, I bet you they've hired a lot of engineers.
That's good.
But that's not every car. That's an average.
Yeah. Average. Some have to be 100.
Yeah. Some will still be 20. Yeah.
Some will be 20, yeah. An average.
Are they exempting the pickup trucks?
I think this is a fleet average, right?
It's well, I don't know. They left and they got the trucks excluded.
The trucks are different.
And that accounted for the great pickup in the sales of
trucks?
Pickup trucks,
yeah. Right.
Yeah, because they could have 14 mile per gallon pickup trucks that they make a ton of money on.
So we'll talk about batteries, which are very important. Because the old lead acid batteries were replaced with nickel metal hydride that are used in the last 10 years in the hybrid cars, and
the
now
has.
They are being the Prius has and the Camry, which I own, have nickel metal hydride, and those are being replaced by lithium ion. Lithium ion is more energetic; it's probably about 20 or 30% higher energy density. I have a table summarizing that.
And they smoke,
and sometimes they smoke, unless they're carefully designed, and that's a big deal. We'll see something about 2006 and 2007. There were tens of millions of phones and laptops that were recalled. Tens of millions, like 50 or 60 million batteries, lithium-ion batteries were recalled. And can you imagine if the auto manufacturers had to recall? And the auto batteries are much, much bigger. Like the whole under, the Tesla you pass underneath where you're sitting, the whole body is a battery. If we're sitting on lithium-ion batteries.
Is that within the 787?
Lithium-ion battery in that Dreamliner.
Yeah.
So the Dreamliner's still grounded for good reason.
I just read that the CEO of Boeing was in touch with United Airlines, and he has a proposal how to fix this.
Okay. Great.
Last night, it didn't go into detail what the fix is.
Well, to replace it with nickel metal hydride. or put in, actually, they just should put in auto manufacturers' design of active cooling and separating the cells. The problem with that Boeing is battery is one cell sorted, and the resulting heat, because they're all packed together, then spread mm-hmm. to the rest of the cells, and the whole battery burned up.
Mm-hmm. I guess it is an interesting piece about the Dreamliner, because it's using composite materials rather than metal skin. On the metal skin, on the regular airliners, they try to keep the pressure, inside pressure in the cabin at 7,000 feet and very low humidity, not to damage the skin. And on the Dreamliner, because it uses composite materials for skin, they are keeping the air pressure at 4,000 feet and they can put quite a lot of humidity.
Okay. Yeah.
So the ride is much more comfortable for the passengers.
Well, you know, but there's an advantage. 4,000 feet means higher air density and more cooling. So it would have kept the battery even cooler with higher pressure, air density.
Except that it was probably packed so tightly.
Yeah.
Because the battery compartment is not pressurized.
And I have my own, based on this research, I have my own opinions of what's happening. What I see is that the cars with no internal combustion engine, IC, with only electric batteries, they're being researched in great build at great cost, like spending $1 billion for one manufacturer to build the Karma, which has sold 2,000 cars. That's $500,000 per car overhead. How are they ever going to recoup that? And the batteries themselves are extremely high cost for a large battery. And I don't think there's going to be, I mean, not many people are going to afford this. You know, $100,000 retail cost, $120,000 for a car. Not many people can afford that. I don't think it's going to have very good success. Until you get a new lower cost, saved, low society cost emission battery. We'll talk about that later on. Now, the long-term winners, I think, and starting right now, are plug-in hybrids, like the Chevy Volt, the Prius plug-in. They have the lowest life cycle environmental cost, and I'll show you that. Well, this is a computer club meeting, so how is this related to computers? Well, computers are everywhere, and the features and functions of cars are controlled by computers. Without the computers, you would not have a high efficiency. So what's driving this is the government mandate from Obama last August to go to 54 miles per gallon by 2025. Here's the curve.
It does include light trucks, but...
Yeah, that's what it, that's right.
Yeah.
That's what it says. So this is year, and this is some fuel economy. We still have it. We still have it here. And this is the corporate average fuel economy. Now, what does this do for us? It really helps us. It reduces our oil consumption by 12 billion barrels. We save almost $2 trillion in fuel costs. And the government estimated 2,000 to 3,000 additional costs for the most efficient vehicles. I guess that remains to be seen. I'll show you data on current cars. 13 manufacturers agreed to the new standards. They all are taking different approaches. We'll talk about that in a second. There are also there are credits for things like air conditioning units. So you can reduce the average miles in a car legally below that 54 if you have air conditioning. It's interesting because most cars have air conditioning.
Why do they reduce it for air conditioning?
I don't know. Because you use energy for air conditioning. Of course, you could, if your car is cabin is heated, I mean, that takes fuel as well. There's no credit for that, though. And I can see very obviously in my hybrid, in the winter now, fuel economy is less. It's obviously less. I'm sure with a Prius, it's less as well. Harold, you complain about in the winter your car has lower gas mileage. I've heard you complain.
I don't know. I really haven't seen any detailed records.
Well,
I imagine
probably. My
city. That's where she has
Needles. 30 and a half during summer to about 26 and a half.
So it dropped four. So you keep very good records.
No, it sounds it's one of the indicators.
Ah. Is that not that's a hybrid?
That's a hybrid. 2005, one of the first ones.
Wow. That's the Ford Escape.
Ford Escape. So part of that is due to the mixture of the gasoline during the winter.
Oh, that's very
important. Right. Another part is just due to the fact that the lubricant, especially on the engine and the drivetrain, is cooler, and there's a greater frictional losses. My regular conventional car drops from like 31 in the summer out on the expressway to maybe 28. I lose 2 or 3 miles a gallon.
Really?
2 to 3. I mean, it's hard. I don't keep that precise record.
Right. Yeah.
My driving.
See, well, the new hybrids are start stop. They start and stop all the time. You know, I can be driving down the highway and the engine will stop. I don't know it.
Is that quiet?
But it's quiet. Yeah, it's quiet. You can't tell.
Wow.
What's going on? Except for a little idiot light that comes on. You know, but they use 0W20 oil.
That's thin.
Yeah.
They use that year round.
Yeah, 0W20. Wow. Yeah.
I know the Honda's with the 5W20 and their has got a CRV. They've been generally going for lower viscosities to improve economy.
You think that would cause more wear?
Well, they don't mind that so much.
They want to sell new car? Replace the car?
Most cars don't wear out, they break down. Not due to wear out.
You've actually designed
bearings.
They're for tractors?
Yeah, for John Deere.
So we have an expert here. So
really.
We have a series of experts. Yeah. Jim Wilson, wherever you are, before Bill came, actually built and drove for several years a lead acid electric car. He and his friend actually produced 2 cars. So he's a manufacturer.
Right.
And you said you loved it. You know,
yeah,
you did no maintenance. It's idiot-proof.
The almost no maintenance. Blow out the tire once in a while, check the distilled water level, the batteries, and that was about it. But the life of the batteries just wasn't good enough. It 2 years, and that was then the shot.
How much did it cost to replace?
Well, I mean, I fortunately managed to make a connection with Exide.
Yeah.
And they gave us 2 sets of batteries for free.
Oh, that's a great
to try out, and we gave data back to them on how they were performing. So we got them free, but when we were faced with buying 2 dozen at that time it was $60 a piece, we said, enough already, we think we'll have to wait till a better battery comes along. And I've been waiting ever since.
Well, a dozen batteries would still be. Well, of course, back then $1,000 was a lot more than it is.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh.
So this is data from 3 days ago. Toyota new car prices, and I've shown both the manufacturer's suggested retail price and also what Edmund calls the true market value. So I think that means what you actually paid for the car.
Yeah.
And my intent is to show what you pay for the hybrid portion of the car and what the break-even time is. So I've shown that calculation later on in the table. So you need to look at the EPA mileage, or your measured mileage, to determine if it's worth it to buy an electric car, hybrid car. So the 2012 and 2013 models are the same for Toyota.
You say 40 city and 38. Highway?
Yeah, that's the actual XLE, which is what I bought. I bought the XLE for the features it has, like navigation and backup camera, a whole bunch of nice features.
It's amazing the good price.
I paid actually. Well, down here someplace I said how much I paid. So for a fully, for most of the features, for the Toyota upper end, I paid. actual price, $27,794 plus taxes and fees. But that's including destination charge. And I actually got that from Auto by Tel, which is a very good shopping service. And I checked with dealers using Auto by Tel, actually, on both the East Coast and West Coast, because I could buy it either in Portland, Oregon. I go there frequently. I'd be there tomorrow, for instance. And so from four dealers in Portland and four dealers in this area, Monmouth, Ocean County, it was the same price, within $100.
Wow.
And it was a good price. So, anyway, so that's...
Switching costs are the same in New Jersey as they do in Mississippi.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. But the cost of a house is very different.
It is, yeah.
But the cost of food and clothing and cars is basically the same around the country.
So the 2012 Camry Hybrid is has the best, at least the LE version of it, has the best gas mileage of any mid-sized sedan. I bought a mid-sized just because I wanted to increase volume for carrying things versus a Prius. I also looked at the Prius.
So the 2013 is
not as... 2013 is actually the same. Well...
But you showed 40, 38. You showed three more miles.
Oh, yeah. The XLE has 17-inch wheels.
Yeah.
And I get lower gas mileage. Here's the difference.
The other way.
So, comparison of XLE, it's 40 city, 38 highway. The LE version is 43 city, 39 highway. And why it is, I don't know, except my car came with 29 PSI in the tires. Tires have a side molded stamp that says they're rated to 51 PSI. Most recently, I put in 42 pounds per square inch to see what the impact is on my gas mileage. I'd like to improve my mileage.
If you drive over ice and snow or something like that, you'll lose traction.
Oh, with high fuel time.
Yeah, because they have a bigger footprint when they're lower pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the one disappointment, is that my miles per gallon is only 40.
That's overall. It's pretty good. So those are your actual measures?
No, these are actually EPA numbers. So go back down here. So we have also the Prius, the lowest. It's really been the lowest gas mileage compact for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And here's your prices. You can buy the compact version of the Prius for $19,700. You get 53 city, 46 highway.
That was 2012, right? Is it 2013?
The 13 are really the same design. Okay. And it's like actually pay $200 more. So the manufacturers suggest the retail is $200 more.
Okay.
Why? I'm not sure.
Well, it goes up each year.
See, why is the miles per gallon higher in the city? Because you use more electric in the city than on the highway?
Yeah, I think so. It's less, you're using less energy at low speed.
To the lower speed.
And yeah, the way the car is designed is they take whatever the average car requirements for energy and build an engine around that. In this case, it's a 1.5 liter engine required on the average to propel that car at probably highway speeds where you need most energy. And then if you need a little more energy going up a hill, they add the battery, and I can see it very, very clearly in my car. So I'm going to 60 miles, 65, 70 miles an hour. Go up a little hill, and I can watch the indicator, and it shows battery is now being used to propel the car. I go down a little hill, right, just a little hill, on the parkway.
Yeah.
And I can see it reverse. Now the engine is
charging
the battery. Mm-hmm. And they do that constantly.
On enough of a hill, I would imagine. The engine cuts out, and you're charging the battery.
I was afraid of that because some people wouldn't drive room.
On a drive from Freehold to here, where you're going like 40 miles an hour on average, the car is half coasting. I mean, half the time really it's off, and you're going to battery, and the other half that engine is on. So it oscillates off and on. And the principle is you want it. the 1.5 liter or 1.8 or 2.5. You want the engine to, whenever it's on, to be at maximum fuel efficiency. The right torque and the right RPM to have maximum minimum fuel consumption, maximum fuel efficiency. So the electronic does exactly that. So when it needs engine power, it puts it on to the right efficiency, and it has special transmissions to convert it to the right torque to the wheel and the right battery charge. And then when it doesn't need the engine, it turns it off completely. It's either on or off.
Wow. That's amazing. You would think that wouldn't last very long.
So on the highway, the answer to the question, on the highway, that engine is almost always on. It really is on. At 60 miles an hour, it is on. Above 40, it's always on.
Yeah.
But in city, 40 miles an hour, it's not needed half the time. It's not needed half the time. So it's half off. And so you get a lot better mileage in city driving than in highway driving.
But there must be a good reason why at high speed. You just need more power, probably, because
the drag force on the car is C sub D times V squared. Mm-hmm. So your drag force goes up with the square of the forces.
Right.
So speed is very expensive.
So these are the actual prices and the price you would pay for these various cars. And when you look down here at the price increase due to the hybrid version of the car, this shows what the difference is in MSRP and what the difference is in the actual price you pay at the dealer. And it's roughly $2,600 to $2,800 thereabouts. You can choose whatever you want, but I chose like $2,700 as the difference in what I'm paying for the electric. Mm-hmm. And then I ask, well, is that worthwhile? You know, do I get my money back? And when I do the calculation, assuming 15,000 miles a year, $3.30 a gallon, I'm using the EPA combined miles per gallon of the two versions of the car, I get a payback of 5.3 years, mm-hmm. which is okay. But the reason we bought it was really, really a feeling that we wanted to preserve the environment.
My daughter has one. She lives down in Northern Virginia, commutes into Washington D.C. And by having a hybrid, she can ride the hob lane.
Oh yeah, another reason.
That's a good deal. Yeah.
That's the reason she bought the hybrid.
What is that breakdown? What is hybrid 1.5 kilowatt
hour? Oh, I calculated what the battery cost would be, really like the OEM cost, based on some data of what the OEM prices are presently for a battery pack. And right now, I saw a report that it's $737 per kilowatt hour for lithium ion, and they expect it to drop to 400 some. But I was told that the Tesla currently has battery upgrades. It's $500 per kilowatt for the first 20 kilowatts, and then $400 for the next 25. But I read something else that probably is true. The actual cost of battery pack is about 50% batteries and 50% all the other stuff, the cooling, the electrical, the hardware around it. So I'm not sure. I expect when you upgrade Tesla battery, you already have some built-in stuff for the battery, and so I'm not sure, but the price for batteries is in that ballpark. So using those estimates, a 1.5 kilowatt battery, which I have, probably cost Toyota about $1,000.
And they're charging the manufacturing price.
Yeah, so this is what they pay. Oh yeah, they buy their batteries from Panasonic.
Okay.
And that's true of all the manufacturers. They don't produce their own batteries. They go to a battery expert. And they've been doing that for 10 years, by the way. And at least a nickel metal hydride. And so a plug-in hybrid, like the Prius plug-in, has a 6 kilowatt hour battery, which is about four times the size of the hybrid. An electric has 24. But look at the difference. So that 24 kilowatt, the battery cost itself is
$17,000.
Wow. How much? $17,000.
That's only four times.
That's 4 times the kilowatt.
4 times, yeah, that is. It's exactly that. It's 4 times the kilowatt plug in. So as the battery size goes up, because the price is high, it's a lot of money. And if you do the cost effective, is it cost effective? You decide it's not. You know, for these bigger batteries, you cannot afford it.
Is the bigger battery all in one in the hybrid, in the 2005 hybrid, the battery pack is 256 D-size batteries.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. And it comes in packets of 6 batteries. So if the section fails, you just have to replace it.
Have you done that?
Well, I've owned the car since 2005.
Yeah.
And I haven't had to replace the battery yet.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a Prius.
Which car do you have?
I have 2005.
Which
Prius.
Prius. Okay.
No battery. No battery problems.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if you want to do it yourself, you can. There's a YouTube video that shows you how to get a new battery.
Yeah.
Replace individual cells.
Show the guy
getting fried. Yeah, so you can do it if you want to. And in fact, there's prices here someplace.
Steve will be teaching class on that next
summer. An example, John Haas replaced his Prius battery. I think it was a 2007, but his high mileage, like it was like 150,000 miles, and his battery wore out. It cost him $3,000 last summer.
Right.
Now, you can buy the Prius replacement battery refurbished for $2,000. Here's the site. Or you can do it yourself for a few $100.
Are these nickel hydride?
Yes, they are, nickel metal hydride.
You can do it for a few hundred?
Yeah, it's actually less, $100. You can buy the pieces, and you measure the voltages and discharge, and you buy what you need and put it in.
Huh.
You replace the cells.
Don't throw the whole thing at once?
You can if you want.
Well, what size are the individual elements?
They're little volts, like, what are they? Nickel metal hydrate is like 1.2 volts. And they stack them somehow, so it's like 7.2 volts. Something like that. And then, so it's modular. There's more data on that later on.
They use soldering connections?
They say they use special connectors that are more reliable, but I don't know what they are. I haven't seen them, but you can buy all the replacements, whatever you need, if you do it yourself. Okay, so now these cars have some of them have very high payoff time. Here's New York Times from last year, April. Added cost of fuel efficient technologies would take drivers many years to save money. At that time, the Prius and this Lincoln thing would pay off in 2 years. And it said you need to have a gas cost $5 per gallon to make the Ford Fusion pay off. You need $6 a gallon for a Toyota Camry. There was a big redesign of the 2012 of the Camry hybrid that dramatically increased its gas mileage. How they did it, I'm not quite sure. One of the things they said they did was went to an Atkinson cycle engine. And we'll show that later on. So why do these people pay for more advanced technology? One is they get in the special lane of the roads, right? Many never do the math. Some say I'm going to fix the environment regardless of cost. I'm sort of that way. And I look at cost, but I say I'm going to chip something in. People want to have good fuel economy because if they have poor fuel economy, they might look stupid. And the alternative of electric cars are so much more expensive that you feel good buying a hybrid. Now
the thing can boast to people who are 15 miles per gallon.
Yeah, you sure can. Now, this is a really fun. Let me try to blow this up. A really fundamental curve.
That's
pretty good. Okay. So it's a generic. Let me go down a little bit.
Okay? It's declining returns.
Exactly. Yeah. So that to save 500 gallons of gas. This is number of gallons used versus the miles per gallon, just a generic standard curve. So to save 500 gallons, to go from like 2,000 to 1,500, which is going from 10 miles per gallon to 12 or 13, you say it's roughly save $2,000 per year, say 5,000. Now, 500 gallons times 4, $2,000 a year, and you increase your gas mileage 2 or 3 miles per gallon. All right. So, if you can increase back down here, if you're on that curve there, if you can increase your miles per gallon by 3 miles per gallon, you could spend $2,000 and break even in 1 year. All right. If you're out here, way out here someplace, and the example is going from this point to here, if you go from 20 miles per gallon to 40 miles per gallon, it's a doubling, a tremendous increase. You'll have, again, saved the same amount of 500 gallons or $2,000 a year.
And to get it down to zero, it'll
now,
it
where we're going is to 56, 55, right out here. Right, we're going to write that this point where my arrow is.
And where are we right now?
We're something like 29... 30 in that ballpark, in the upper 20s. All right. The point is, when you go way out here, the curve is getting really, really flat.
It's asymptotic to zero.
It says if you go from 40 to 45 miles per gallon, which is a big, big increase, 40 to 45, you can only spend maybe $100.
To
break even in 1 year. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's really. It turns out to be really hard to make improvements.
It's not worth it, No.
It's really hard to make improvements. It's you have to do it at very low cost. Very low cost.
Better to drive your car less, plan your trips.
Does that make sense? So to go from 50 to 55 is almost flat. You know, you say $50 per year or something. But the cost of making that improvement in a car, what is it? How do you do it? And you only have $50 to spend. So this is a dilemma for manufacturers. How do they get out to 56 miles per gallon? So what are they doing? Well, let's take a look. I don't remember what this comparison is. Oh. Gee, you can't even see it.
This,
I wonder what happens down here. Okay. I extracted it. I highlighted things I wanted to show you. It's just more fundamental things that help drive the equation of car improvements. This research paper, which has been republished in many forms now, is a fundamental paper. They looked at fuel savings, relative initial costs, break-even gasoline prices, using advanced powertrains in the period 2015 to 2045. And then they compared 2007 to 2030, projected that. And so they're projecting that advanced engine design, the way the manufacturers will do this, advanced engine designs is going to save 45% in fuel economy. When they add in a hybrid electric that with the advanced engine, they're saving 60%. When they go to a 20 kilometer range plug-in hybrid, they're saving 62%. A 40 kilometer range plug-in hybrid saving 75%, and a fuel cell hybrid saving 72%, and a full electric car is saving 79%. So on this energy efficiency point of view, it's best to go to this big battery full electric car. But if you look at the cost-effective point for each of these things, a hybrid electric car has a 5-year payback if the gasoline price is between $2.50 and $3 a gallon, which is pretty darn good. I mean we're there for gasoline. We have, so we really have less than a 5-year payback. Assuming four different things: 4% discount rate, 12,000 miles a year, and it was even lower. This adding a battery was even better for cost-effective break-even point than having a conventional vehicle using the same high-technology engine. That is, adding a battery was very cost-effective. It saved you money in this analysis. The full electric cars with 100-mile range, the break-even point was gasoline of $4 to $5 a gallon, even at the projected point where the batteries would come down in price. So even at that end point, you'd have to have gas at $5 a gallon to break even with a full electric car. And they found fuel cells are cost competitive. They're actually as good as the hybrid electric or even the internal combustion engine at these fuel cell costs, 10-year lives, and hydrogen prices. So it looks like fuel cells are going to be increasingly important based on this paper, this research.
What exactly are the hydrogen fuel cells?
Don't know. Anybody know?
I think you would have to refuse them with hydrogen.
Yeah.
Instead of hydrogen gas station.
Yeah.
Is that not breaking up water? Not that sophisticated?
No, you use as much energy to break up the water as you get back out of the fuel cell. If you know, minus the losses. No, they have to sell the hydrogen. I don't know if they sell it in I suppose compressed form. Liquid would be required too much.
So let's just zip on. So how do manufacturers do this? How do they increase the efficiency? They include hybrid and pure electric. This is the way they're going to meet their 56 mile per hour requirement. They have engine enhancements, variable valve timing, reduced displacement, and turbochargers. They have transmissions offering 8, 9, or 10 speed models.
And the CVTs.
And continuous variable transmission, like mine. You'll see more about that later on. They reduce weight in all different ways. Redesign heavy components, like your seats of your car.
Wow.
Replace the skins with much higher cost. Look at the difference in price, though. Aluminum and steel are 30 cents to 55 cents a pound. Magnesium is $2 a pound. Titanium, $35. Carbon fiber, $40 to $50 a pound. That's the Boeing Dreamliner, right? They're paying $40 to $50 a pound. Now, here's an interesting thing. The lighter the car, the better the fuel efficiency. It's roughly proportional. That's interesting. Is that true, by the way? The fuel saving is roughly proportional to the mass. This is what this...
I mean, there's two factors, right? There's the mass of the vehicle, which has to be speeding up,
yeah,
slowing down, and then there's also the wind drag, which is,
yeah,
only a function of the volume.
You need to have...
Well, the frontal area and stuff like that.
You need a small car. So he says, at the end of this, you're going to get your groceries in there, you might get your golf cart in there, and maybe you'll fit in yourself. Oh, and the other thing is, what is it going to cost you? Well, this 2011 study said this is going to cost up to $11,000 a car to meet the 56 miles per gallon. The Obama administration last year was arguing it's $3,000 a car. So we'll see how this plays out. I know that in my case, I paid less than $3,000, and my break-even time is 5 years. So I feel good. But I'm way down in a curve, you know. I'm nowhere near 56 miles per gallon.
There's another factor that you missed there. I just haven't replaced tires on the 2009 Honda Accord.
Yeah.
And now the new Hondas are coming with Michelin green tires.
Oh, yeah.
Your Camry probably has them.
I wish I did.
My Camry has that, too. They're Michelin. And they really make a...
big difference.
I literally researched it to like other Prius you could get 3 to 5 mil miles per gallon.
Wow, that's great.
What I really notice is when you take your foot off the gas pedal and then it's relatively flat, the car just seems to roll effortlessly. Rolls so much better than the older
car. So what about stopping?
I think they're pretty good on that too. I mean, they have those ratings. The number for how long they last, and then there's ABT for temperature and traction. They have A rating as well for temperature and traction.
So I'm going to take you. So a technique, in fact, is the tires in the wheel. I need to click through advertisement.
Oh, and one other thing. I got these tires at Costco. I have a special order.
Really?
Oh, I carry them.
Sears carries some of them.
Yep.
What does it cost?
It was $190
a tire. Yeah, they're all expensive. But all the tires have really gone up. Tires are not what they were 5 years ago. It's low rolling resistance, basically.
Right.
But there's a rolling resistance to it, with the weight on the tire, because it gets deformed as it rolls.
Right.
And that flexing consumes energy. But these tires flex, they flex easier. I mean, radial tires in general have done that, right, over the old bias block.
Sure.
They have lower rolling resistance. And these are optimized for that.
So here's what the auto manufacturer is doing, and I'm going to show you a slide later on that shows a tire. And special compounds in the tire. But so this is from early last year, and a series of slides showing what manufacturers are doing for increased economy. This is the Chevy Cruze Eco, went to 42 miles per gallon using this engine, a 1.4 liter turbocharged engine. Let's see. I'm going to see what else is. I'm going to just look at a couple of the photos. Oh, no photos. Fiat 1.4 liter fully variable valve actuation. Interesting. No photos. Here's a photo.
Yeah.
BMW turbo four-cylinder direct fuel injection twin scroll turbocharging. Anyway, it keeps going on and on. I'm going to go back to this is some sort
of that's image too that we didn't get before.
You're right, this is the one you skipped. Fully variable valve actuation.
I think that in the 1980s the Japanese manufacturing produced a multi-valve design. And I remember I got a Honda. It was the four-cylinder with three valves per cylinder. And it has 10 times more beds than a Ford with four cylinders.
I have four valves per cylinder now. So I have 16 bells.
Okay.
So here's the technology toward the end of last year, September 2012. And low rolling resistance tires. The Chevy Cruze Eco has used a silicon compound and revised tread design for improved fuel efficiency. I don't know who makes them. I can't. Can you see?
No.
I can't read who makes these things. Oh, and more simple things. The air conditioner uses a lot of power. Well, here's a new air conditioner compressor that says it has electronically flowed controlled variable displacement. Oh, just a whole bunch of stuff on engine design. I'm going to skip back. So there's 19 images of new designs from, this is from auto trade shows, mid to end of last year. And then there was a trade show, if I can get back to it. Let me just
close that. Here we go. There was a trade show first of this year, just like last month, February. And here are the photos from that show. Oh, this is the new Ford 1.0 liter three-cylinder engine they're introducing around the world. And it's so small, you can put it in an airplane overhead luggage compartment.
Wow.
Okay. I guess, yeah. So, this is what it looks like. It looks to me that it looks like a plastic model.
It's a SolidWorks drawing.
Oh, just the computer drawing.
Yeah.
Okay. Then now the next one I think will be a picture of it used in a car.
So
yeah, this is
always a Corolla picture. So
oh, true. Anyway, inside here is the engine you just saw.
Yeah.
It's a three-cylinder subcompact Ford Fiesta, which gives 40-plus miles per gallon. It's not a hybrid. Now, if they put in a hybrid into this car, or maybe a micro-hybrid, they could increase that 10 to 15%. And they probably will.
It's a lot of complication for that expert.
All right. It keeps going on and on. I'm going to skip all these pictures. There were maybe 20 photos here. From trade show last, this is last month. So I'm really going through what are the drivers of what's happening, and the next step is if we look at the overall emissions, and this is from a paper that is a series of research things, papers, over the last 2 years. And it's been published widely and analyzed many different ways. But this is the total societal cost of the emissions. Did at the bottom, did I say, these are all the different things they considered in the full stream cost of the emissions. And it's a comparison, and this is dollars, total dollar, dollars over full stream, of a conventional engine, a hybrid electric, a plug-in hybrid with 20-kilometer range, plug-in hybrid 60-kilometer range, and a full electric 240-kilometer range.
What does D stand for?
Battery electric.
Battery electric.
Okay. And over to the right, I'm going to show you these. So this is the emissions from vehicle production, the emissions from the battery production, the emissions from charging that battery, and it's assuming the current electrical grid, which is a mixture of coal and nuclear and wind and everything else, the current. And there are two other tables like this. One is, assuming you plug in this battery electric into your house with a solar grid and you're charging your own battery, so you have zero emissions. If you do that, the yellow goes to zero, or close, except for the emissions manufacturing the solar cells. So the curve actually goes down like this. Right, so the full electric vehicle is clearly better in that case. Another bar chart shows what happens if the electric grid gets worse, goes to full coal, in which case this thing goes astronomically, goes way up. So the emissions get horrible for the full electric battery.
Basically, you're powering your car off of coal.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. And so,
you know,
so
in these sound vehicle envelope calculations a while ago, if all the cars would switch to all electric power, you would need, just for U.S., you would need about 100 or 200 extra power generation.
Wow.
It's probably run a big line over from China. They pay coal for it.
You don't hear much about it.
Okay.
That's a good point.
So what do I'm going to talk about the sales forecast. We'll get into that in a second. But next, if you go to these trade shows and talk to the auto executives, how are they going to meet, what's their view? How are they going to meet the new standards? And this is a survey done just a couple of months ago, and some quotes from this guy, David Cole, of the Center for Automotive Research. The auto executives, 85% of them believe that the internal combustion energy engine is the best chance to meet the fuel efficiency standards for the next decade. They're going to rely on downsizing that and improving that internal combustion engine.
Can I throw in a caveat that they ask the carriage, the horse and carriage manufacturers, what they thought the best strategy was for competing with these new gasoline-powered combustion engines? They were told there's something different. So.
True. I'll have quotes here from other people. You'll see them later on.
Okay.
Okay, and then this guy, David Cole, said that he believes the internal combustion engine is still the best bet. We won't be writing the epitaph for the internal combustion engine for a long time, maybe 50 years in the future.
Sure.
I'll show you data of why that might be. And also, everybody's realizing the electric vehicle is not saving the world.
Not unless somebody comes up with a cheap battery.
And the executives, auto executives, are putting their bets on plug-in hybrids. They're saying that in the next 5 years, the electric technology that will attract the most customer demand to increase their sales is plug-in hybrids. 36% believe it's plug-in hybrids. 11% believe it's the full electric battery. And they're putting their money where their mouth is. 24% say they're having large investments in plug-in hybrids. And 8% large investments in batteries. And so the overall consensus this year is that plug-in hybrids is the best way to go.
What makes the plug-in battery more expensive and more complicated?
It's bigger. It's bigger, physically bigger.
Why?
Not for the plug-in hybrid, though.
Actually, the Prius plug-in has four times the capacity of the standard Prius hybrid. Because you plug it in, you expect to drive 11 miles, right, without the engine coming on. So for very short commutes, it's perfect fuel efficiency. But you have to have a bigger battery to drive 11 miles.
Can they do that for a non-plug-in?
The non-plug-in Prius, how far does it go on electric? My car will go maybe a mile, 2 miles.
You can only go about 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, I can go.
Well, you won't go very far.
I can go from.
Really?
Yeah. I can go from Dwight Road to my house on electric. In my car, it's probably a mile.
Yeah.
With no problem. And it's 25, 30 miles an hour on electric. That's my limit.
40 miles an hour without ever on this area?
Not 40. I can go 30. I can go 25 to 30 with no problem getting from a mile distance on electric. But I have a small battery. That's the limit, though, how far I can go.
Yeah.
How many kilowatt hours is it?
It's like 1.4 kilowatt hours.
Not much.
Now, you say that the plug-in would have a
plug-in is like 6 kilowatt hours, like 4 times the size.
But is that because they have more batteries?
They use bigger batteries, yeah.
But I mean, couldn't they put, in other words, what the difference is between a plug-in and a non-plug-in? They could do the same thing with a non-plug-in with a bigger battery.
They could. You're right.
The thing is that if you've got a bigger battery and you're plugging in to charge it, electric power is... take less pollution to generate the 2 kilowatts of electric power than you burn gasoline.
Oh, that's true. So, in fact, isn't it cheaper if you plug into your grid?
It's cheaper
per mile than using gas per mile.
Okay.
In my case, I happen to have a solar panel overhead my house.
Oh, you're one of those zero pollution person.
So it costs me about a penny a mile for electricity.
Wow.
Good.
He'll never sell his house.
I mean, this whole thing is why do you do this? And you don't do it necessarily for the economic payback. You do it because
you feel like it's the right thing to do, or you are tired of paying somebody else for all that.
And hope
that you
replace
the roof. But you know, you reach the price of solar panels imported from China drops to the floor. The savings never showed up in the installation costs. And the same thing like the price of natural gas supposedly dropped by factor of two or three, but your gas bills for heating never change. So somebody's is making a good job.
I'm going to tell you where I'm going to go. I'm going to give you an overview of how hybrid cars work. I'm going to talk about sales forecast, which will answer some of the questions. We'll go to some fundamental comparisons on energy content, and then talk about current cars and futures. And we'll do that in the next 10 minutes, maybe.
This is all on your website?
Yeah, this is all here.
Okay.
The best source I have for how the cars work is here. It's a Union of Concerned Scientists website.
Oh, really?
And this animation shows how these cars work. This is a series configuration, which is the Chevy Volt. And the Chevy Volt has a gasoline engine connected to a generator, not to the drive wheel, but to the generator. And so when it's off, there's no energy flow. When you go slow, the battery powers through electronic batteries the wheel. When you accelerate, the engine comes on, and the battery together drive the wheels.
That is not the way this
Volt works. How does it work?
The Volt is all electric.
Yeah.
The engine only comes on when the charge is depleted in the battery.
Okay.
So it's all electric.
Well, this was accelerating. I bet you it doesn't?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope. You can floorboard the thing out here and take off like a shot, and the engine
will... The nice thing about electricity, electric motors, is the very high torque.
Yeah, they have really good startup
torque.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so this isn't quite how it works.
It still looks good. I can show my
face. Yeah. Turn off this flow because it only comes on, the engine comes on when the battery is depleted.
Or when it gets low.
Otherwise, I think it's probably correct.
The electronic link between the battery and the engine says come on when the battery is low.
When you're cruising, the engine is charging the battery. When the engine is coming on and the battery is depleted, it charges the battery. Otherwise, is the diagram right?
Again, that's only if the battery is completely discharged.
If the battery is discharged, okay.
Or if you're in what they call mountain mode.
Okay, you press the button, mountain mode. Okay, here's my car. The way the Toyota cars, Prius and Camry and Lexus and the others are designed, the gasoline engine and the battery electronics are connected to a common point. Like this.
So they're mechanically coupled?
No, well, they're actually electrically, because that thing is actually, the transmission is two electric motors, motor generators. I'll show you later on. There's actually a teardown of the transmission, Toyota Prius transmission.
So it's not the torque coming
off.
It's
a fascinating video. You're going to love that video, but we won't have time.
Yeah, I'll look at it.
But there's two electric motors. It's really a little compact thing. It's just amazing. It's called, it's just so simple. And it's the heart of this synergy.
What happens when you take this thing to the repair garage?
I would do it myself. You look at it and you say, I can do it.
You'll do it yourself. Most people are smart enough not to.
The way it works, the battery, to start the car, start the engine, the battery provides power. And that's one of those little motors in there just spins the engine cycle. Okay, when you accelerate, both the battery and the gas are contributing, are going up a hill, and combined in this little transmission to drive the wheels. When you're cruising, it's the same as the Volt. Right, the gasoline is providing power that a generator that drives the battery. So this is the way the Prius and the Camry work.
So speak.
braking. How do we brake? Oh, regenerative braking. So when, and I, sorry, we've driven 1,500 miles, and I don't think I've used the brakes almost at all.
No, you take it.
What I do is I press the brake pedal enough times the stop sign so that I'm fully regenerating the power and doing exactly this instead of using mechanical friction.
Mm-hmm. If you push harder?
Yeah, it'll brake.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like this
when I
sequential
see the,
brake?
When I see the regeneration needle peg, I say, oh, I've gone too far, we're braking. And I back off. That's
you want to say you're very conscious of using
up
your
kinetic
energy.
Yeah, I guess so.
It might last that long. So, and here's some definitions that may help. The microhybrid, which probably will be coming soon to us, is already present in Europe. And it's just taking a standard car and throwing in some features we'll talk about later. It's start-stop only, so the engine can be turned off at stop signs. A full hybrid can be run on the battery, as we've discussed. My car actually has no connection between the gas pedal and the engine. It's electric. We're expecting a Volt driver. Oh, this is probably a Volt car.
Yeah,
tell him to come down.
I did. Come in now. You tell me beat me,
you know. Oh, yes.
Another one.
Yes, we have a total of four cars here. Thank you.
I'm
glad you could join us. Sign in. There's a sign-up sheet someplace. So, and then regenerative braking is what we just discussed, right? You apply the brake and you recharge the battery. Now, these new cars are using Atkinson cycle engine. This is from Wikipedia. And what does that engine do? It has an offset crankshaft, a longer power stroke, and a minimal intake stroke. And they do something to prevent drag caused by manifold vacuum. The disadvantage, you're going to see that because you don't have enough intake, is you don't have enough air into the engine. So what do? You have a supercharger.
And they named it after you.
Yeah, and that's called a Miller cycle. another disadvantage is you have much reduced torque at low speed, and so you have a battery. So you have a battery plus the Atkinson cycle engine, and best of both worlds. And that's how manufacturers now are going. And I was reading most cars now are using Atkinson cycle.
Really?
What is the advantage of the Atkinson?
It's higher, much higher efficiency. But these big problems, you can't move the car at low zero speed, no torque. Right? So you need a battery at low speed. And you don't have enough air intake into the engine because of the way it's designed. So you need a compressor. So this is from Wikipedia.
You said something about most cars having, or any cars using the Atkinson cycle engine?
The Prius is. I assume the Camry. Yeah, I know the Camry is.
Your Camry doesn't use an auto cycle?
It says it's Atkinson.
Really?
I'd rather use it.
I thought it was the same. I guess it's not the same engine at all.
I compared this to the Ray Jakubik's car. From the outside top profile, my engine is identical to his. This is 2010.
In his
non-hybrid.
Yeah.
Mine looks the same from the outside. My engine.
How can they be different?
I don't know. They could change from the inside. The head could be different somehow.
Okay.
I don't know.
So
I don't
know. I'll look up that difference.
Okay.
Mostly about
Alpine. Okay. So where are plug-in hybrids going? Here's sales forecast from last month. This guy Fisker is the owner of the Karma manufacturing plant, and he's saying that the world is going to plug-in hybrids, and his own car is an example. His Karma, which is $100,000 plus per car. It cost him $1 million to make the plant, manufacturing factory, and he sold 2,000 of them. But he said that's the way to go. I'm trying to zip through this. This is an interesting data. This sort of thing has, let me go back to what it was. This is an interesting, it's been circulated now for the last couple of years, and what does this mean? Worldwide, by 2020, over half of cars will have this stop-start micro-hybrid that we'll talk about in a second. Only 1.5% will be hybrid, like I'm saying,
like
the world is being saved by hybrids, only 1.5%, and 0.6% will be pure electric. So the reason for micro-hybrid is dirt cheap. And you take a standard car and you throw in a few components. The cost to manufacturers is on the order, if I can see it someplace, on the order of $300 to $1,000 to do that. The components are a starter, because the engine's starting and stopping all the time. It has to have a much higher start-stop lifetime. The crankshaft sensor, I can't spell, knows which cylinder to inject the gas to start the engine immediately rather than waiting for maybe half a second delay for the engine to rotate to then fire the engine. Regenerative alternator, so you recover the energy from braking. This is presently used in Europe, where they've had $6 a gallon prices forever. And they've gone, our same manufacturers in the United States who manufacture cell in Europe are now using start-stop. There's research and announcements all the time. Here's one from Johnson Controls proposing for the United States or worldwide market a start-stop battery operating at 48 volts, although I don't think it's going to sell because everything in the auto industry is based on 12 volts. Here's press, New York Times, some examples. These are stop-start batteries, and these things are a high cap capacitors. And the idea is to combine the two. So I'm quoting from New York Times. American drivers have yet to hear about micro-hybrids, where it's common in Europe. Turns off engines as traffic stops, improves fuel efficiency 10% or more. It can cost the manufacturer $300 to $1,500. Some stops, start-stop solutions use ultra-capacitors, and that allows batteries to be 30% smaller. The ultra-capacitors have very high input and output current, like extremely high amperage, and can provide immediate response. Batteries, you have to be careful, I think, of discharge and charge. But if you combine the two, you can make your battery smaller. So that's just an example of what manufacturers are doing to... Yeah, I think I'll skip all this. This is a really interesting chart comparing different batteries and the watts per kilogram of your... How does the lead acid compare to nickel cadmium? You know, that is
just as alkaline as rechargeable.
110, you're right, yeah. Power a car with alkaline.
Yeah.
But here, the interesting thing, just look at the dollars per watt hour. Lead acid is clearly cheap. It'll last long, right?
So
nickel metal hydride, NIMH, is twice the price of lithium ion. Right? Mm-hmm. Lithium ion has like 30% higher energy density.
Yeah.
manufacturers are going to lithium ion and paying attention to how you design cooling. Make it feel safe.
Adding gasoline on there is a little bit.
Gasoline.
Because you can only use it once.
I added this. True. Non-recyclable gasoline. But look at the cost, dollars per watt hour differences, and the watts, the power density, gasoline versus any other battery.
Well, yeah. It's the lower right column is very meaningful.
Yeah. This is just amazing. That difference. It's why the world is using gasoline and will for the next 50 years.
A lot of energy in pounding gasoline.
Yeah. All right. I want to skip forward. So why do we have the glut of electric cars? Because automakers want to be ready if the battery technology makes a sudden leap forward. If you want to know more for any of these, I've cited the sources for these. Right. All of these things are cited. I put together a quick comparison of various cars and what they are using for batteries. The Boeing Dreamliner uses a lithium cobalt, high energy version of lithium. And they apparently have no active cooling. And shorted cell cause thermal runaway.
They just don't go far. Right.
Yeah. They don't go far? They're grounded.
That's
right. And it's the size of a standard lead acid battery, like the battery in your car, it's small and about the same weight, but high capacity. The Tesla, I skipped over the photos, but you can see photos of the batteries in Missouri's cars. Tesla has the bottom underneath the car completely covered with batteries. They're using lithium. 160 mile range, 280 mile, 265 mile range.
What's in that third column?
This is just comments.
Oh, cells.
Here's cells. What I've been able to see for cells or number of modules. Like the Nissan Leaf has 48 modules. Here's the weight. I tried to show weight of the various batteries. The Tesla high capacity, high range battery weighs 1,200 pounds. I'm going to go back down to Chevy Volt. This is typical of how things are done. The Chevy Volt lithium manganese spindle, I don't know the formula in the chemistry in the battery, has a 16 kilowatt battery and 10 kilowatt hours are used. For all these batteries, they're using the midpoint of the range. And they don't use the top 15% or bottom. They use the middle point to avoid deep discharge to make the batteries last as long as possible. So it's really like a 10 kilowatt battery used in the Chevy Volt. They have a 35 mile range for that using the 10 kilowatt hours. Interesting how it's designed. So they're water cooled. They have 1 millimeter channels machined into plates that are between the cell modules. So it's each module is isolated from the next and water cooled. So they avoid, if one cell shorts, burns up, hopefully it won't burn. It won't get to the temperature it burns. Okay. But if it did, it's still isolated from the next cell. As opposed to the Dreamliner, which allowed the propagation from one to the next. On the other hand, the Toyota Prius, the Toyota Prius and the Toyota Camry are just about the same. The battery capacity is about, I calculate at 1.3 kilowatt hours. They actually specify in ampere hours. So it's 6.5 ampere hours, 201 volts. 168 cells, those are little things you can actually get in and replace them. 28 modules. They're cooled, they're using Panasonic prismatic battery, little D cell type things. And they have a metal case, each battery has a little metal case around it. The first 70,000 10 years ago of these cars sold in Japan had plastic cases. And they have battery problems, and they replaced the battery with metal enclosed batteries. I don't know what the problems were. It was undefined. Maybe cooling, I don't know. So this is a little summary of what I know, what I found about different types of cars and what type of batteries they have. You can go, here's the photos of all the battery packs. If you're interested in what they look like, you can click there. Go to Consumer Reports for reviews on all these cars, including the April 2013, which I have right now. on how cars compare. For Prius owners, there are actually sites about hacking the Prius and hacking the battery. There are people who, it's a PriusBattery.com or something. All about the batteries used in the Prius, and about the hackers who have changed various things to make hot rods out of Priuses, and how to do it. And there are people selling kits to modify your Prius. Prius has sold, like, I've read, like 3 million cars worldwide, and about 1 million in this country. And so there's a lot of evangelists who are working on their car. Craig left, but, and I showed this at the last of January seminar, but this is a great video on YouTube. It's the transmission teardown. How that transmission is designed.
I saw that. It was very interesting.
Yeah, if you go to these sections, 27 minutes, 34 seconds, or 32 minutes, 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. They're just a few second clips that are just amazing. Yeah. So, Craig, this, you need to look at this on your own.
Okay.
It's the transmission teardown.
Oh, okay. It shows how
It shows how it's designed.
Prius?
And they actually put it...
Did you
want the Camry
too? It's
the same.
Oh, it's the same.
Can I do this? Can I go directly to 3210? Let me just take you to a piece of it.
Now one has a continuously variable thing.
They both do.
They call it that, but I think they just, that's just a synaptic.
The
power split.
Here it is. Stop. Yeah. So they have two more. This is the transmission.
Wow.
This is the flywheel to the engine, and this is one motor connected to the engine, and a second motor, and the principle is that motors can go forward or backward. They use the phase from the two phase from the inverter to control this transmission, so it's completely electrical, going forward and backward in speed. And this little thing right there is a planetary gear, and that's the heart. It's just a little thing. The heart of this transmission, right, plus the two motors, and they can control the speed. And this is simply geared down to change the speed, and a little belt, a steel belt. Why they have a belt, I don't know. Maybe you can tell me. But there's a steel belt inside the transmission. And otherwise, it's just really straightforward. This is the transmission. There's no clutches. There's nothing here.
It's all electrical.
It's electrical. Well, no, it's actually zero clutches.
They can make electrical clutches.
Well, the way they stop things is they reverse the motor in the opposite direction, so that
the bolt has a number of clutches to disconnect.
The bolt has clutches, so the bolt is different, but this has no clutches. So this is their synergy drive, hybrid synergy drive.
Amazing. That's very. So unconventional.
And they've had this thing for 10 years. I think it's a mechanical wonder. It's just amazing.
So. You feel better when you're deaf than you
are. Awesome.
Thank you.
Super.
Just like cell technology, right?
Yeah, it's TRW.
So.
Back
home.
Really?
TRW? Not Toyota? Oh, what is Toyota? The company TRW.
It's like a big aerospace defense contractor.
Wow.
Thomson Reamer-Woolridge. Thomson
Reamer-Woolridge.
So this is talking about futures, what's happening, and engineering solutions of how you really protect those lithium-ion batteries from burning up. Bottom line is lithium-ion itself is mature after billions of dollars probably in research and money still being poured in. Other battery chemistries are being explored. And if you take a look, some of the things they're looking at, lithium sulfur, lithium ion, iron, zinc air, magnesium, and even lead acid. That's lead acid. So all these things are being explored, but there's no best overall. There's no solution yet to make them really cheap. You can read more about it on your own.
Okay.
And that's my talk for today. And we have four cards out there.
I have to look at this website. I'm trying to develop a database by interest. Okay.
Like your body.
Right here.
Well, you know, they put petals in the car.
The thing about the human heart, how it works, it runs and runs and runs.
Chemistry.
Very little input.
Chemistry.
So maybe this what we need.
You got ACH molecules or cells that do the conversion from
the body. This
is it was ATP.
So if you want to know more about this series of talks, last talk was car electronics and diagnostics, and the talk itself is right here. And all the backup stuff, just as I showed you for this talk, it's all for car electronics. And then over time, I've done a lot of these talks. That's it. So outside, I left my hood open and trunk open so you can. And I don't know what's about the rest of you.
Now, the cars to look at, are they out here? Or
are they all down here? Where did you park? You're up on the street?
Yeah.
On the street. Well, easiest might be.
Here's the Volt.
I have a Volt and
a second Volt. Are they both the same year? Is this,
I don't know.
What year? What year did you park?
Yeah.
2012?
I didn't even realize the Volt was out in 2011.
What is yours? 2011.
Okay.
No difference?
There's a few differences in that.
Yeah. So these cars are your future. When you buy your next car, high likelihood they'll have a battery in them.